In a world in which movies struggle to find plot, Alan Adams of The Main Edge breaks it down for you in Pass the Popcorn. Now on Downtown with Rich Kimball.
Let's all go to the lobby. Let's all go to the lobby.
Oh yeah, it's time for us to talk movies. We do that each Monday with our friend Alan Adams, who joins us in studio. Hello, sir.
Hello, sir. How are you?
Wonderful, thanks. Happy Monday.
And to you as well.
Weekend was okay for you?
Yeah, it was pretty good. Pretty uneventful. Stayed kind of close to home for the most part. I did get out yesterday. My buddy Izzy and I got out and played a round of disc golf at Rock Solid Disc Golf.
Ooh, in, yeah.
Out there in Holden. It's a place that's been in progress for a very long time. I actually played it back before, like long before, like when they first started, sort of indicated that it was going to be a thing, before it was fully completed, like the whole thing. This is 10 years ago or something. But we went out yesterday, and it was pretty fun. I will say, you know, it's a bit more exercise than maybe I'm ordinarily accustomed to. A lot of elevation changes up and down and whatnot. So it's a nice walk through the woods as far as that goes. But yeah, it's obviously still a work in progress, but there's a lot of really nice stuff going on out there. So it was nice to see.
Now, speaking of disc golf, did you see the interesting post from our friend Chris Rudolph?
You know, it's funny that you say that. I was actually, I saw it like right before I was going to get in the shower. And I'm like, I should send him a message and find out what the story is here. But I didn't have a chance. So yes, I don't know what the deal is. But yeah, for those who don't know, our friend Chris Rudolph, who works with Waterfront Concerts, posted a picture of a disc golf basket there in the Main Savings Amphitheater space. And I honestly don't know what that's going to be about.
Right, with a very mysterious soon.
Yeah, well, I mean, it's like, man, doesn't that guy like playing it cryptic with all this stuff? So I'm sure it's something, it's either something extremely obvious or completely out of left field. I don't believe Chris does any middle ground. it'll be very interesting to find out what that's all about. But hey, man. Anything that grows the sport, I think it's a lot of fun, and
right.
I hope more people get out there. We certainly have a lot of wonderful opportunities here in the area.
And, you know, maybe they incorporate that into shows, like if you can bounce one off one of Stevie Nicks' capes and into the basket, you know, you get an extra point.
Oh, man, I tell you what, it's considering the heft of these discs and the speed at which they travel, one imagines that doing it with a full house is probably a mistake. But you know what? Don't listen to me. Like by all means, let's experiment.
Right.
I can only imagine that one only assumes that Steven Tyler is an avid disc golfer. Like that's where I'm landing on this. So we'll have to wait and see. But
I'd pay to see that.
Right. You know, speaking of scarves.
Right. Probably has more than Steven now. And they, you know, as they get older, they begin to look a lot alike.
It's basically like the portrait of Dorian Gray, except neither one of them can remember where they put their paintings.
Exactly.
And so here they're just sort of exchanging energies at this point.
Well, let's talk movies. Three of them that you would care to discuss with us this week. Where should we begin?
Well, I know where I'm going to start. So we'll do Secret Headquarters first.
Okay.
So this is a Paramount Plus exclusive streamer. It's one of those movies where again, we live in a world that is absolutely jam-packed with superhero business from the top down, whether you're talking about the MCU or the DCEU. But there is stuff beyond that, and this sort of this movie kind of falls into that sort of category where it's ostensibly superhero connected, but it's not like an extant franchise or IP or anything like that. It's an original story, such as it is. But yeah, it basically boils down to a kid with a difficult relationship with his father. His parents have been divorced. Discovers that perhaps there's a little bit more to his father's absenteeism than he might have anticipated. Specifically, when at his father's house unsupervised, he and some of his friends discover that there's a massive underground secret chamber below his dad's house that, near as they can tell, Well, it's the headquarters of the superhero known as the Guard.
Mm.
Spoiler alert, his dad is the Guard.
Oh.
Yeah. Oh. It's one of those films where it's very clear what's happening from like our little sort of introductory moment onward. Very much a kid's movie. The kids are sort of at the center of the frame. The superhero stuff is present, but it's kind of at the periphery a little bit. You've got Owen Wilson playing the dad. And with all of the Owen Wilson energy, only dad flavored. it's fine. Like he's fine. Like I love Owen Wilson. So he's doing his Owen Wilson thing here. You've got some wonderful kids. Walter Scobell, who was so good in The Adam Project earlier this year, another Netflix, another streaming movie. This one was on Netflix. Kevin L. Williams, who is a hilarious little kid. A couple of other young performers. Everybody's having a good time. Although I don't think anyone is having as good a time as Michael Pena, who's the villain in this movie. He plays the arms dealer who's secretly trying to obtain the source of the guard's power so he can use it to make better weapons or whatnot. It's not really clear what his motivations are, but it's a kid's movie, so it doesn't really matter. Like, he just goes full-on, like, goofball, like, kid movie villain in a way that shows that he perhaps understood the assignment more thoroughly than anyone else involved in the film. But, you know, you might notice I'm not giving you much in the way of plot synopsis because there's not a lot of plot, really. Like, it's just a bunch of kids. They discover a secret lair underneath one of their dad's house. They mess around with stuff that inadvertently reveals their existence to the bad guys. The bad guys show up and hijinks ensue. That's basically how it goes. Again, and I don't mean to demean this, like, it's a movie for kids. Like, it's a children's movie. Young audiences, up through maybe like tweens, early teens, like that's your target here. And I think in that respect, it's pretty successful. Again, I'm someone who loves all this crap. So like I enjoyed myself very much, but I recognize this movie for what it is. If you've got little ones at home, I think that have an interest in this sort of superhero content, I think they will have a very, very good time. If you are a normal adult, you could probably pass on this one.
Okay. All right. Trying to think if I probably I am. Well,
see, I bet your little guy could potentially enjoy this because there's a lot of the sort of weird slapsticky like kid movie villainy that you get from the late 80s early 90s type of vibe as far as that energy is concerned. Mm. So it's fun, but it's just there's not a lot there.
Okay. All right. What's up next?
Well, I guess I wanted to ask you. Do you want to, cause I know you've seen it, and I know you've spoken to the filmmaker. Do you want to talk about Mac and Rita now, or do you want to save that for the finale?
Well, let's save it for the end. Sure. Okay. Why not?
Yeah. Great. Because I'm also looking forward to talking about this other movie. It's the Netflix original, Day Shift. All right. So sometimes you hear about a movie and you're like, oh, this is relevant to my interests. Whether it's you hear the conceit or you hear who's involved or you see a trailer or whatever, like some combination of information comes in and you're like, yeah, this is definitely my jam. This movie was that for me. Day Shift, it's a Netflix original streamer directed by J.J. Perry, who is, this is his directorial debut, but he is a legend among stunt coordinators in Hollywood. Like, he's a veteran stuntman, stunt coordinator, and believe me, that DNA is all over this film. But it stars Jamie Foxx and Dave Franco as vampire hunters. They're tasked with hunting vampires, it's a little more complicated than that. And I'll mention this again, but I can't stress this enough. Veteran of the Penobscot Theater Company stage, Danielle Kennedy appears in this movie as a vampire. I'm not spoiling anything because it's straight up in the trailer. But like, she pops up and immediately just gets shotgunned by Jamie Foxx. Like it's the first, it's our introduction to him as Vampire Hunter. Wow. And it's just him like blasting away at Danielle Kennedy.
Oh.
And then there's an extended fight scene between the two of them, which is just a delight.
That's awesome.
It's just one of those things where it's like, oh, I know her. I actually sent her a message on via social media after I watched it. I was like, you know, Danielle, I really thought you had him.
Yeah.
And again, no spoilers. All this happens before the title card. Like this is our full. We're just dropped in to this film. So the deal is, Jamie Foxx plays a guy named Bud, who is a. We meet him when he's cleaning pools in the San Fernando Valley, but it's not long before we discover that he is much more than a mere pool cleaner. When he shows up with a bunch of crazy combat gear, breaks into a little bungalow, and that's when the aforementioned shotgunning / hand to hand combat happens with Ms. Danielle Kennedy. That's when we learn that he is a vampire hunter, apparently, in this world, and it's built out pretty well. Although I could have done with a little bit more of the lore of this particular film. He goes to sell the fangs. Apparently, the fangs are very valuable for whatever reason. But he has to go to a sketchy pawn shop guy, played just in the grossest, most wonderful way possible by the always excellent Peter Stormare.
That's fantastic.
But that's when we learn that there's actually a vampire fighting union. But Bud got bounced from the union for reasons that are not yet clear. And so he has to deal with this shady guy. But then, as it turns out, Bud is he's separated from his wife, played by Megan Good. He's got a precocious and very cute 8-year-old daughter. Who loves him very much and is very forgiving of the fact that he occasionally shows up late because, again, hunting vampires. But he finds out that they don't have enough money for her to pay her school tuition. And so if they can't pay for the tuition, his wife and is going to take his daughter and they're going to move away. And so he's got a very limited amount of time to come up with the cash. And so he reaches out to his old friend, Big John, played by Snoop Dogg.
Oh, man.
To get back into the union. Big John being an incredibly respected member of the vampire hunting community, his word has a lot of pull. And so he vouches for Bud to return. And the boss hems and haws and finally lets him back in under the condition that he is accompanied by a union rep at all times, because the reason he got bounced before was numerous violations of various union protocols. And so that's where we meet Seth, played by Dave Franco, who works in the accounting department of the Vampire Hunting Union. But he is also a union representative. And so now he will be accompanying our friend Bud on his missions going forward. Turns out he's maybe he's maybe playing both sides. It's unclear, but that's neither here nor there. They wind up going out and starting to do vampire hunting things. But as it turns out, Bud has attracted the wrong kind of attention.
Oh,
particularly, and I want to make sure I get the name right, because we meet a particularly powerful vampire who is also a real estate mogul, her name is Audrey San Fernando. It's obviously an alias, right? Like, she's a vampire, played by Carla Souza, and she has these grand plans that involve, buying a property, like basically helping vampires infiltrate the community, and also a scheme that may, just may, allow some of these vampires to venture out into the daylight.
Oh,
yeah,
wow.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And so, Bud, not knowing that he's in the crosshairs, goes about his business until, things happen, families get involved. Before you know it, it's up to Bud and the very few people that he can trust to do battle with these very powerful vampires and prevent their real estate / sunscreen scheme from coming to fruition. I love these sorts of genre mashups. Like, I love the idea of, elements of horror, elements of action, elements of comedy, and sort of just bringing all these things together. This movie does a pretty good job of that. Jamie Foxx is very good. He's very funny, and he's got a wonderful physicality. Like, he's a great fit for this kind of movie. Dave Franco has that sort of nebbishy vibe kind of down, and so the juxtaposition of the two of them together is very nice. You get this sort of buddy cop kind of vibe that really works. But you also get some, again, like, J.J. Perry is an absolute stunt legend, and so you get some really fantastic action sequences, whether we're talking about, like, close-up hand-to-hand combat type stuff, like the sort of, like, the John Wick-esque, like, gun-fu kind of stuff. There's an extended car chase that's really good. Like, so you have all that, all those elements, and there's also plenty of gory blood stuff as well. So you kind of mash all these things together. There's all these really odd-shaped pieces that really don't seem like they should fit together, but they do a really good job of making that work. It helps that you've got a really good cast. Snoop Dogg is just an absolute delight. He's look, Calvin Broaddus is a national treasure. I think we should all just sort of agree on that.
Well, yes.
And so he's wonderful. All the supporting players are really great. It's one of those movies that I knew I was going to like it. I didn't know if it was going to be good. But it turns out I did like it, and it was good. Like, not necessarily a great movie, necessarily, but if anything I've said to you sounds the least bit appealing, just sit down and watch this movie, because you're going to have a good time.
All right, there you go. Alan Adams from The Maine Edge with us here on Downtown. Up next, movie directed by Maine native Katie Azleton, starring Diane Keaton, Mac and Rita.
What'd you think, man?
Well, you know, I'm biased, because, you know, like Katie, I really enjoyed it, but I see nationally, at least, it's getting fairly mixed reviews out there. It's not Citizen Kane by any stretch, but I thought it showcased Diane Keaton's talents really well. I love the supporting players. I thought the wine club ladies were absolutely fabulous. Taylor Price, who plays Carla?
Taylor Page?
Taylor
I think?
Page, yeah, Taylor Page. I thought she was great. I enjoyed it, but
yes,
but
no,
I'm no movie critic.
Yeah, well, I'm right there with you, Rich. Like, I had a really good time with this. I kind of came down, and you can tell me what you think about this. Like, in trying to sort of summarize what I thought of this movie, like what kind of movie it was, like, I landed on it's like Freaky Friday meets Harold and Maude.
Yes.
You know what I mean?
I think that's fair. Yeah.
And the fact that I had to go that far back to find a relationship with this sort of age dynamic in major cinema, that speaks volumes as to where we are. And I think speaks to some of what Katie was trying to do with this movie. We meet a young woman named Mac, played by Elizabeth Lail. She grew up with her. She was raised by her grandmother. Always been considered what you would call an old soul. Fascinated by the lifestyle of the aged and retired. I'm right there with you. She grows up. She writes a very successful book about that time with her grandmother, but is kind of spinning her wheels a little bit after that. Like, her agent has her posting, doing product placement on Instagram, and, you know, generally sort of paying the bills through, like, that sort of influencing. She's sort of trying to get another book going, but not really having a whole lot of luck. She's got a dog named Cheese, which, Mac and Cheese, hilarious. She's got a neighbor named Jack, played by, the dude from the show that I'm not entirely sure I could say on the air. S-C-H-I-T-T.
Yeah, we've said it.
Okay.
Schitt's Creek.
Yes. Anyway, he's on that.
Yeah.
He's
great, too.
Yeah. He's lovely. She finds out, she's the best. She's the maid of honor at her friend Carla, the aforementioned Taylor Page. Her wedding, they wind up going to Palm Springs to a house that Carla's mom, Sharon, played by the wonderful Loretta Devine, has sort of procured for them. They go. Mac just realizes pretty quickly that she's not really into, standard bachelorette weekend stuff. Winds up deciding to take a wellness break in a pop-up tent at the side of the road, like you do. Only She relaxes a little bit too much, and then the next thing you know, she comes out and she's no longer Elizabeth Lail. She's Diane Keaton. She's aged 40 years. No explanation as to how this has happened. After some panic, she catches up with Carla, tells her the whole deal, and they basically decide they're going to try to figure out how to get her to turn back. But in the meantime, well, she's got to go home. So she goes home, encounters Jack, the next door neighbor guy, decides she's going to be her own Aunt Rita, and that's so she's Rita now, and starts hanging out with Jack, and starts becoming considerably more successful in the influencing realm as Aunt Rita than she ever was as Mac. And so that situation starts to complicate. There are some developing things happening with the Jack situation. And of course, her best friend is still getting married and she still needs to figure all that stuff out. And as you mentioned, Carla's mom's wine club with just packed with fantastic actresses of a certain age. They basically tell it like it is, old lady style, and it's fantastic. And so you have Mac/Rita trying to decide what is the right thing to do. Like, does she want to stay in this place that she has found? Does she want to go back to the way things were, or does she want to try to find some sort of middle ground there? And we watch as she sort of navigates those waters and, just hijinks galore, Rich. I enjoyed this movie. I thought that I think there's a real conversation to be had there, I think, about the way in which we tend to be a little dismissive of our aging populace. But as we see from these ladies, being dismissed has a power of its own, in that they basically weaponize the fact that nobody wants to deal with them. Mm. And so they just do what they want, when they want, how they want, and live their lives in that way. And there's something, freeing about that, I think. And the performances are all excellent. Again, I made the allusion to Freaky Friday meets Harold and Maude. I think maybe the coolest part of this movie is the way in which that sort of budding potential romantic dynamic is treated between Diane Keaton's character and the character of Jack. Like, because it's not played for laughs. Like, there's not a lot of punching down. Right. Do you know what I mean? Like, yeah. Whereas so often, like, it's just viewed as somehow other when the entirety of Hollywood is built on men, the leading man's love interest being 20 or 30 years younger.
Yeah, and it's a believable relationship.
Yeah, well, it develops in a very organic way, I think. And I think that's important. Like, it's not like, it just feels honest in a way that a lot of these relationships don't. And I think that's a huge part of why it works. Again, you mentioned, like, Diane Keaton has been sort of, in a lot of ways, the sort of strong woman romantic comedy tropes that have become so baked into the movies that we see. Like, she invented that stuff, man. Yeah. Like she's been doing that stuff since the 70s. Like,
well, you see elements of Annie Hall there when she first appears. Like, oh man, that's what happened to Annie Hall 40 years later,
right? And it's just and that I think that energy does a lot to sort of carry things through. And okay, like, there are some the hiccups, I think, in the along the way.
The script is not great.
Yeah, no, I mean, I think there are definitely some issues there. I will concede that I personally don't need a 5-minute drug sequence in the middle of things, although it does lead to a phenomenal voice cameo that I will not spoil. I didn't realize who it was in the moment.
I didn't either. Katie has already talked about it on the air, so we let that particular cat, well, dog, out of the bag.
But it's very fun. And like, look, summer movies, when we hear summer movies, we hear blockbusters and CGI and explosions and dudes wearing capes and all that stuff. And that's, I mean, that's very much part of the deal. But there is another kind of summer movie, and we don't get it as much as we used to, which is unfortunate, I think. But it's the smaller, you know, character driven, relationship driven kind of film that you want there to be more room for. And I think the fact that I think it's phenomenal that this movie is receiving such a robust theatrical release. Like I think in other times, I think there's a real chance that this is a movie that goes straight to a streamer or whatever. And that's not to dismiss the streamers as quality outlets, but I don't know. There's something nice about being able to go to the movie and go to the movie theater and see, you know, this and not, not Thor or.
Right. And to see women in their 70s, 80s, and in the case of Lois Smith in her 90s, with significant roles.
Yeah, that's a big one. Well, it's very obvious that that Katie Hazelton has had strong older women in her life along the way. You can't fake that kind of respect, yeah. If that makes sense. I think it's really great that she is using her pull to make this kind of movie. Because it's the sort of thing that people just don't make them like this anymore.
No, and if you want to see more films put together by women, produced, directed, you know, you look at the credits, boy, there are a whole lot of women involved in the making of this film, and I'd like to see more of that from Hollywood.
Yeah, ditto. And again, not that there would be anything wrong if she did, but I did find it interesting that... you know whose name I did not see anywhere in the credits?
No.
Mark Duplass.
Oh, no, you're right.
Do you know what I mean? Yeah. And it's like, it would be easy to leverage, you know, a spouse's success.
Right.
And she clearly didn't do that. Although, you know, her family's all over this movie, and that's great. Like, that's, I think that's what you should do. But I think a real effort was made here to make the movie that she wanted to make, and I hope people go see it.
Did you, speaking of family being all over, did you spot Mary Budd?
I didn't.
She's in there.
I have no doubt. I know their daughter plays the young Mac.
Yep.
In the film, and not for nothing, but and we can tell. I'll tell this story in full at a later date, but I was present for the baptism of that child.
Oh, well, how about that?
Yeah.
Very nice. There you go. It's a small world after all.
Indeed it is.
Thank you, Alan.
My pleasure.
Hope Stella's enjoying being in a one-dog house again.
She sure is. Living the dream.
Nice. All right. Thanks, Al. We'll see you soon.
Yes, sir.
It's Alan Adams of the Main Edge on Downhouse.